Bună dimineața și bine v-am găsit pe Startup.ro, eu sunt Vlad Andreescu, iar astăzi vom discuta despre antreprenoriat, despre investiții, despre ecosistemul din Cluj-Napoca și nu numai, cu unul dintre cofondatorii Transylvania Angels Network, dar și un antreprenor care are deja câțiva ani de experiență în România și voi trece pe limba engleză acum pentru a vi-l introduce pe Emmett King, co-founder of Transylvania Angels Network and founder of D3 Cyber. Nice to meet you, Emmett.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it, Vlad.
So I did a small introduction about you. Right now, you have a startup, D3 Cyber. You are part of TAN, Transylvania Angels Network, investing in startups. You worked for a big company in Romania for some years, and I just want to know a bit about your story. An American living in Cluj, involved in different startups, Stereos, Iva. How did the journey started and how did you end up where you are today?
Well, I mean, if you want to go way back, I was 8, 9, 10 years old. I knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur. That was goal number one. And goal number two was to live outside the United States.
Why?
I give my parents a lot of credit. They really gave me a world view. They didn't travel very much at all. I think Canada and Jamaica were all they did outside the U.S. But through books, my mom was a librarian and a school teacher. Through books, I was able to do a lot of traveling at a young age and read autobiographies as well as just read about the world. So they really opened up my eyes to the fact that America is good, but it has some problems. And it's only one country. There's another 150 of them back then. There weren't so many. Now there's over 200 or something. And so, from a pretty young age, I wanted to leave. I didn't know when and I didn't know where, but it was the same thing with entrepreneurship. I didn't know exactly. I didn't have this idea of I'll build this widget. I'm going to create this product. It was just that I wanted to have the destiny of my career in my own hands from a very young age. So started with a paper route and then after college, went into accounting to learn how to run businesses. And was part of a founding team or the founder of 10 different businesses in 8 different industries from 88 to 2003. Yeah, I like to be the stupid guy in the room where I don't know much, but I have to learn a lot. And I usually like to do that, standing next to somebody smart who does know that domain or has mm-hmm. clients already. And it's interesting, D3 is a similar business model to what I used a few times in the States. It's with two partners who have 20 years of experience in IT and cybersecurity, and they knew each other, mm-hmm. but I put them together over the course of 3 years of being patient until one of them was ready and the other kind of came along a little bit later, even though I knew him longer, Tudor. And so being an entrepreneur from way, way back, I never ever thought that I would come to Romania. You know, if you want to make God laugh, you tell him your plans. And I picked all these nice warm spots, Central America and the Caribbean and Australia, New Zealand, and he just laughed. And so I moved here to Romania in 2003. First came to visit in 2000. Met my future wife, who is an actress at the National Theater. So she said, yeah, you know, if you want to go, we can travel anywhere you want to go, but my job does not commute. So I'll have to be a waitress or something. So why don't you think about moving to Romania? I speak the language. I have family here. And in 2000, between 2000 and 2003, came to visit a number of times and just knew it's Eastern Europe. There's all kinds of things that are needed. So I don't know what I'll do, but I'll figure it out when I get there.
What did you discover here in terms of business?
Lots of frustrations because it's not set up for business. It is better now, but back then it took 3 or 4 weeks to set up a company, and mm-hmm. I had to go to 5 different offices and get a stamp here and a stamp there, and hire my girlfriend at the time as my chosen translator. So it wasn't so structured. Also, the accounting system is very different here, more based on the French double bookkeeping. And mm-hmm. in America, we just do one set of books, you know, no double bookkeeping. So that was quite strange for me. I started the first business that I started was Adventure Camps. The business still exists, although mm-hmm. I got a business divorce from my partners in 2007. But we started that to help them pull it out of a nonprofit and turn it into a for-profit. Not much profit though, because every teacher, every pensione, every travel agency is your competitor. But very interesting, allowed me to travel around Romania and begin learning Romanian. So it was a good start, for here in Romania.
So right now, how many businesses do you have active right now? Because I mentioned D3, but there are more.
Well, Tan is an NGO. It's just a branch of Cluj Startups. NGO started in 2012 by Mircea Vadan. I started looking at startups in 13 and 14, and I didn't see much. So he was quite had a lot of foresight to get started in 2012. He had learned from the Bulgarian system earlier. Actively, there's Tan, where I'm on the board and a founder. And at Telios, I'm only on the board, so I have no day-to-day mm-hmm. responsibilities, but it's something that takes an hour or three a week, depending on how many times Philip calls or would like to meet. Philip is the CEO and the founder. I'm a founding investor there from when they went from a Sorelet to a Sa'ah. He invited me into a private placement, and it was 2018, and I had been looking for investment for 3 years, angel investment. And I knew my first one had to be a grand slam. I don't know if you know American baseball, but a home run is worth 1 point, a grand slam is worth 4. And I knew because I was American, because I was four, you know, people were watching, people were listening. So I knew it had to be a big one. And so in 2018, that's Telios on the board position. Iva, I have a board position, but I also earn sweat equity. So I got, I invested, but I also got a portion of equity for promising 20 hours a month, 1 hour a day. For biz dev, sales, strategy, strategic collaborations, and those things. And so the way I break it down is about 25% for Tan and Telios, 25% for Iva. And then what I promised my partners at D3 was just 50%. So you got to set those expectations at the beginning and under promise and over deliver. It's the only way to do business. And so that's the other 50% of my time is now building up and growing with my newest partners, D3 Cyber, for cybersecurity services.
So you mentioned that you looked into startups in 2014, started with your first investment in 2018. How do you see right now the ecosystem from a personal perspective as an investor, as an entrepreneur, but also from the TAN perspective?
Yeah, so the quick, easy answer that I give everybody is that the startups get better every year and there's more of them. Mm-hmm. I believe that. Some people don't, but I do, and I'm seeing a lot of them. And the other thing is I have a lot of experience as an entrepreneur. So when I see people that are trying to do something and it's not very good, it doesn't discourage me because I know that if they fail and they really love it, they're going to come back and they're going to do something else. It's one of the missions of TAN is not only to teach people about angel investing, but it's to treat the startups with respect, even if we're not going to invest in them, and give them the best advice we can and to help them out let them know that if it doesn't work out, then they can try something else. You know, failure is a big problem here in Romania. Mm-hmm. I know there's this push for I love failure. It's a new event in the ecosystem. Yeah. I think it's really great. I told them that I'll be glad to be a speaker here in Cluj because it was a big success in Bucharest, and people are really fear of failure is just no good. It's you're learning, you're growing. Fail smart, fail fast. That's Silicon Valley speak, but it's most entrepreneurs have to have a couple of failures. The guy or gal who hits it off right the first time and becomes rich, it's very small percentage of the time. So I really like how the ecosystem has evolved, and even through the crisis, the preceding seed tended to hold itself. And in Romania, the valuations did not soften; they softened in some other markets, but again, not like other Series A and those for sure. We continue to see good startups. We invested more last year than the year before. I think the year before was about a half a mil. Last year was a mil, a little bit over €1 million. I'm quite confident that the startups are out there and that the ecosystem will continue to grow. We all have to, you know, we all have to do a part of it, just like you being MC and some of these things, and me coming down from Cluj and Mircea and the guys from Vlad from Rubik Hub with the Rose Startup to try and talk to the government and change things. So it's a good time to be in Romania, for sure.
I wanted to ask you, you mentioned about 2023, 1 million in investment. In 2021, you had 1.1. Half a mil in 2022. How was 2023? Because you mentioned, just going further, you mentioned that in the pre-seed area it wasn't so much of a slowing down. We saw in the bigger parts of investment ecosystem in Series A, Series B, a slowing down.
Yeah, I think, you know, we're made up of guys mostly with fives and tens and a few gals. So boy, I wish we were above 10%, but we're at seven, I think six or seven. Now that we've grown a little bit, it came below 10. You know, people were really cautious this year as well. 22, they were, you know, they were cautious. And this year, again, pretty cautious. Part of the reason for a bigger year this year and in 21 was Telios. So Telios is the very first SPV that TAN did 1 year after I invested in 2018. It was the first SPV where we raised, I think, 200. And then in 21, we raised 800. And this year, it's about 700 that we've raised for Telios. So it's interesting and fun for me that two of my babies, you know, two of my kids are helping each other, which is I think, is a big reason for the bumps in 21 and 23. We do allow some VCs to come in and some family offices. I think we have four of them. We charge them a different rate, a higher rate, the 500 euros. The membership for us is only 300 euros a year. Most of the angel networks are 500 or 600. Mm-hmm. Because we're an NGO, we're trying to keep it low. Makes it hard with a small budget, for sure. But we're trying to get more and more people in, so that they can learn that that angel investing is not the riskiest in the world. That's called crypto, in my opinion.
How would you describe for people who would like maybe to invest in startups, but they don't understand maybe the tech industry so much, they are fearful of doing the investment. How would you describe TAN, for example, if you want to attract someone to the network? And how does it work for investment, for example?
We have members that have been members for 2 or 3 years that haven't made that investment. And we don't force anybody to make an investment. We ask them to, you know, think about the idea of investing 5 or 10K in a year. But if you don't want to, that's okay. You're still learning, or you haven't met that first one. Look how long it took for me to find my first one, right? So we understand that, and there's no pressure. The beauty of joining TAN is that it's nice people. The only rule we have is no jerks allowed. Maybe don't put that in there, but you know, it's we're really striving for that. So it's nice people who treat each other well and who treat the startups correctly. And that's important to Mircea and I from the very beginning. Sometimes people are a little bit harsh or very harsh, especially if they're not going to invest or somebody makes a mistake or the pitch is terrible. So we tell people to come along. And one of the big benefits about coming along, especially if you don't know tech, I'm not a tech guy. I'm an accountant, you know, I'm an entrepreneur. I'm not a tech guy. We have a vast proportion of our members are techs. So when I run into a tech issue that I don't know, I go to a member and I say, hey, you know this industry, you know the tech in that industry. What do you think about this startup? I don't care if you're going to invest or not invest, but could you come along and help us kind of kick the tires and look under the hood and tell us, is this tech that you think, you know, can carry some weight? And then it's up to me to look around, find others and see if they had the competition and other aspects about the business plan, to go to market, those things. But if you've never done angel investing, then you should, it helps to have a group of people around you. You know, I myself, who had never done it before, I wanted a group around me because I want people to tell me about my blind spots. I'm a very optimistic person. I like a team. I like this idea, but I don't see some things, and Mircea or Radu or Cotiso or somebody will say, whoa, Emmett, what about this? Oh man, I didn't think about that. So, and it's also on the other side for them, Romanians tend to be a lot less optimistic than me. And most of our membership is Romanians. We have a few expats in the group. But it's interesting for them to try and listen to my optimism. Why am I optimistic about that person or that opportunity or that team? And so that's the good thing about joining a group is you're not by yourself in something you haven't done before.
Talk me more about this relationship between the investors and the entrepreneurs, the founders, because you mentioned that sometimes, and we know that sometimes investors are harsh, they expect results, they expect a way of working. How do you see it, this sweet spot of a relationship between the investor and the founder, just for everyone to be comfortable and to grow the business, which is the main purpose?
Yeah, so you got to set the expectations at the beginning. There, you know, I have 15 angel investments now, soon to be 16. And I'm not going to work with all of them. Yeah. Some of them, it's like investing in the stock market almost, that I pick them and I talk to them once a year or I read a couple of reports. One of the weakest things in the ecosystem is that startup founders are not good at getting out those monthly or quarterly reports to investors. It's a real weak spot in the ecosystem for sure. Mm-hmm. If I want to know, I reach out and ask. Right, this time of the year, I'm going to those 15 teams and saying, "Hi guys, Lamal San, and how do we do in 23? When's the investor notice coming out?" And you kind of have to chase them. But in terms of that sweet spot, it depends upon the investor and it depends upon the team. Can I help them? Do I know that industry? Do I know people in that industry? Do they need some advisory or not? Do they already have advisors? It's interesting how few of them understand the aspect of having a good board of advisors, not the board, not the board from the statute and the, you know, not the actual board that makes the decisions for the company, but a board of advisors that gets them up out of the trenches once a month, once a quarter, whatever it is, at least twice a year. I mean, that's not very often. So that they can hear different opinions and they can ask questions and try to learn and try and get some help. That's mm-hmm. another thing that Romanians are not so good at asking for help. Hey, I'm having a problem or I don't understand this. I need some help. Can you please? And I tell people all the time that, you know, they say, "Oh, thanks, Evan. I really appreciate the call." I said, "Yeah, but you've got another 10 investors, 11. Have you reached out to them? Because all of them have knowledge, skills." So it really does depend upon the investor and how much time and desire do they have to help. And the startups, what are they looking for and what do they need? VCs in general, there's a smaller percentage of them that really get involved and help. I mean, that's the mm-hmm. stereotype, but not every angel is getting involved in helping either. So it's, you know, it's not zero on the VC side. It's not 100% on the angel side. And it really kind of depends. So for myself, if somebody asks me to be on the board of advisors and I'm an investor, that's great. I even have one CEO where I'm not on the board. But he says, I like the way that you think, and I just want to talk to you, just you and me, because I'm a tech guy, and now I'm a CEO, and I'm having issues with all these new things that I've never done before. And so, you know, it would be good to talk to you once a month, and you're an investor. So I said, yeah. I said, it's good for me, because if I help you, I'll help the company, and that helps me. So that's another way to help out rather than formally being on the board of advisors.
What are some of the startups from the portfolio that maybe had a good year? Some startups that maybe had a more complicated year, depends on the industry, maybe.
Yeah, I think 2023 was complicated for everybody.
Yeah.
So, and I don't have the reports yet.
Yeah.
One story I can share is that one of my startups, it's two founders. They had a success before. I didn't really love the idea, but I liked betting on successful founders. There's not so many of them repeat founders, right? And I knew Mircea knew them for a while, so I had that a trust factor. And there were some other investors that came in, but they have in 3 years now, they've pivoted three or four times already, and they just can't get that product market fit. And this summer, I wrote to him and said, hey, I'm going on vacation, but when I come back, how about an investor notice to tell us what's going on in September? And we got the email in September. And to my surprise, it was not my first failure, my first, you know, OOB, I call it, out of business. They said that they let everybody go, cut the expenses down to the bare minimum, and the two of them are keeping trying. So I'm curious as to what they did in Q4. I'll find out. But that's the one that is struggling the most.
But because you mentioned some examples like Therios in the healthcare industry, which is growing. I wanted to ask you what attracts you to a startup different than the team. You mentioned the team that you sometimes invest in founders, not exactly in the idea.
Always.
Yeah. What gets you?
It's number one for me. Yeah. I know my Combinator of 500 startups said that timing is more important than team, like 42 to 36 or whatever those numbers were. And I was like, okay, I get it. Because if you catch a wave, then anybody can catch a wave, and it's fantastic. But I'm looking for passion, curiosity, the ability to learn, some strength of ego, but not too much ego, right? Too little or too much ego is not good. That's what I'm teaching my son, right? So you need to, you know, sometimes everybody's going to disagree with you and you're going to be right. But sometimes you're going to be wrong, and you have to listen to others. And that's got to be one of the toughest calls for a founder, is when am I right and everybody else is wrong? It's a tough call. There can be, if you're too stubborn, or you're too much in love with your idea, or you're too afraid of failure. Some young ladies just shut down their company, and she posted on LinkedIn and wrote about it, and I was proud of her. It was a nice post on LinkedIn, so very public and very good. I learned some things, but it didn't go the way we wanted, and you know, so she was not afraid of failure and shared that, which I really appreciated. Then you're looking for the team itself, right? Have they split the roles? Do they get along? You know, go hang out with them, go have dinner with them. And, you know, you see some little subtle, you know, underpinnings. Are there ego issues? So you can't do that all the time, certainly not during COVID and now investing around the country, not just in Cluj. So that's what you're looking for, is you're looking for the people and how they're interacting. Do they know the market? Do they have some experience, right? You know, have they been in there? Have they been in that business, and that's why they learned about it and know about it? Or are they just super passionate about it? Like Philip was, because he had, you know, his wife had early onset Alzheimer's, and he had to deal with the medical system here in Romania. And it was just so super frustrating. And he was a foreigner with some cash, with friends who were doctors, and it was hard. So that was kind of that, you know, that was kind of the motivation. So there's a lot of different things that I'm looking for. I've invested. It's also nice in Romania, where you don't have to specifically look for female founders. They're there. I think at least a third, maybe a little bit more. So at least five of the companies I have female founders, which is great. And two of them are husband and wife, which is a big challenge. I could not do it with my wife. So again, I would sit down and I talked to them a number of times and tried to get to know them. And I asked that question: how is it that you can work together and live together? And so it's about reading people. And sometimes you're going to be wrong, for sure. Nobody's right all the time. But angel investing comes down to instinct. I joke with one of our skeptical Romanian members who wants numbers. He wants to crunch numbers. He needs the data. And I'm like, well, it's great. If you have the data, then you can crunch it and tell me all about it. But a lot of them, they don't have clients yet. They don't have traction yet. So there is no data. So you've got to go on the people, and then your understanding of the product market fit, the market itself, the market size, their ability to scale, to grow. So it's a big challenge. It's a lot of instinct. That's what I say. It's 100%, 110% instinct for me.
How challenging is from your perspective, from what you saw, how challenging is for startups to grow exponentially from here, from Romania? Because we kind of we have this saying that Romania is a small market, but a big country to get to have the impression that you can build the market here. So how complicated is to grow not just regionally, but on a European and global level?
It's extremely complicated. It's very hard. It's hard to build a business right here in Cluj, right?
It's hard to build
a business in a country where you know the laws and you know the taxation and the banking and all the rules, as well as the customs and the language, right? The Germans want to buy from Germans. The French want to buy from the French. It's part of the reason people jump to America, because it gets them, you know, the same size, or, you know, Europe is slightly larger, but it gets them the same size market and the rules are the same. Okay, there's state laws depending upon things. Healthcare is an issue. For sure, there are different areas. FinTech is going to be different, but for the most part, you go to the U.S. and you're going to get 400 million people that speak the same language and for the most part have the same rules. So it's a challenge. Even when I was with the software company Virtech, we thought for sure we could sell in Scandinavia because they're Danish and we're Scandinavian, and it was a huge challenge. Why don't you have an office in Oslo? You know, why don't you set up in Malmo? That challenge is there regionally. And to jump to the States, it's at a different speed. It's like going from the second or third tier in football to the English Professional League, right? The EPL. That's where it's the fastest and the strongest and the most money is around. So that's the analogy I make. Romania is third or fourth tier right now. And we're growing and we're doing good and we have some good successes. But it's a big challenge, even for established businesses and businessmen to move out of Romania and extend to other countries because of all of those aspects.
I want to have your perspective, because you have a global reach, coming from the US, traveling around the world, seeing the world, establishing businesses here in Romania. From your perspective, what's your impression? Because we talk about the opportunities of the EU for the European Union, for the startups. You have a market, 27 countries, but one market. What's the issue here? Because there's, as you said, that's 27 markets, not one.
Yeah, that's the issue. It's culture.
Yeah.
It's culture. And it's not one set of rules. Right. And you know, Switzerland and Denmark are not in the, you know, not using the euro. Right. And so each one is a different kind of a step. And that's a challenge unique to Europe. But I would imagine it's similar in Asia. I haven't done a lot of business in Asia, but I would imagine it's quite similar in Asia that you just don't go. And even China is so big that there's so many regions. And for sure, it's that there's such differences. And culturally, I mean, ever since I've been here for 20 years, and it's everything everybody always says: Germans want to buy from Germans, French want to buy from the French, the Danes want to buy from, you know. So that's the challenge. And the way to overcome that is to find a good trusted partner or to go yourself, right? But then you're in Germany, you're not in Cluj. And it's one of the reasons for Telios. The VCs say, oh, you guys are only in one country. And we have a few clients in, you know, Moldova, Bulgaria. You know, we have a few because the nurses speak Hungarian. They speak English, right? So we have a few. But their whole thing is, oh, you're only in one country. It's too big a risk. However, at Techsylvania years ago, Marius Genny was on stage and he says, this whole thing, you know, some companies are just made to be in Romania. And that's okay. And that's where I met him. I went up to him afterwards and I said, I've seen you on Shark Tank. And you have a whole different persona. He's like, yeah, it's TV. I'm still in touch with him. We're not friends, but as you were the MC at his event and then talked to the event. And I really appreciate that. His example was something like, I know good companies in Croatia and that's only 7 million people. So that he had built a few companies here, and Flamingo and others, he built them and he sold them and he made good money and he grew. I think I'm not looking for unicorns. I'm looking for good teams with good businesses, finding good clients and taking care of them and making a good profit. And if that's just here, you know, people said, tell us, oh, Emmett, that can't scale. You can't go outside. I said, it's okay. Romania is 16 to 19 million people. If we can get 1 or 2 million clients, then that's going to be a very good business for us. We're on our way. We're, you know, hoping to get about half a million next year, just, you know, here in Romania. And we're okay. Regional expansion can happen when the bandwidth is there, when the team is ready, when we have the right people in place. That's when you can expand. So somebody is in charge of Hungary or Bulgaria, or when the war ends in Ukraine, we're already registered in Ukraine because Philip and Adrian, the other founder, they have an NGO up in Siget, and they've been bringing supplies in. And Adrian is an honorary citizen of the Ukraine. He was setting up. He's a doctor and was up there doing triage and things. So yes, but we cannot go there. I mean, the war is okay, fine, but there's no war in Hungary, and we've been offered to come to Hungary. Even VCs will give you money, but it can only be spent in Budapest, kind of a thing. And that's okay, but then who's going to run it? Even you know. So there's other VCs that say, "I'll give you money for expansion only, not for working capital." And we talked to them and said, "Look, that's great. We like that idea. Thanks, but we didn't give you any plan because we don't have the project manager who will run that project. Philip is too busy doing other things. So when we have that, then we're going to come back. We'll give you an expansion plan, and we'll ask you for that money." So it's a big challenge.
Yeah. How do you see 2024? What do you expect from
more of the same?
More of the same?
Yes. I don't expect it to be any different. People are still really cautious. People are still really worried. 2023 was a softening in the IT sector around the world, just because people were pulling back, as well as, you know, other problems that they had, for sure. But people are sitting on cash in investing as well as in companies. And therefore, like never before, you know, the IT companies have got people on the bench, 10% or more. I hear 20 at some companies. So I don't see it changing, you know, and you read some of these doom and gloomer guys that a big humongous crash is going to come. And it's going to be the worst thing ever. And, you know, you should be all cash and other things like that. But numai Dumnezeu știe viitorul. And so for me, it's just the idea of again being cautious and making sure that the companies that you invest in are ones that can handle bad times. I just watched the documentary, and somebody mentioned it. I don't know if it was the founder of Green Horse, but somebody said that Romanian entrepreneurs of 17, 18, 19 were really strong and good because there wasn't that much money for them. They had to deal with struggles and tough times. And, you know, that's for sure. Romanians are they're scurcăreți, right? They're guys, they're people that can get things done. And sometimes too much money is not good, right? Mm-hmm. And so 2024, I'm expecting it to be just as cautious as I was in 2023. And saying no to, I mean, that's, you know, everything I read was 5 to 8 years diversification, have some money for doubling down, and your job is to say no. And I can challenge a ton as well, because I'm a founder and because, you know, I have a lot of investments, and I'm not a rich guy, right? These investments are 2,500, 5,000, 10,000. It's, you know, not big money. But if I say, I'm not going to go in. So I go, why not? It's not good. And so this is also some of the aspect that it's not an aspect of, you know, who's investing in, you know, that follower. That's a big problem in the VC world in the States, right? That's with Theron and all these other ones had problems. Yeah. Oh, you know, Sequoia's in, I'm in. And nobody did due diligence. So, you know, I tell people that I got no problem helping you out and doing stuff, but, you know, I bought a new apartment last year, and my land was rezoned by Cluj, and I have to go after the city now. And so, you know, I don't have deep pockets, and so it's somebody asked me on Monday, and I said I'd probably have at least 30 investments if I had deep pockets, because I passed on a good 15 companies that I really would have liked to go in, and I either had to make a choice or the timing wasn't there. And I just had to say no. And then the other aspect of that is the anti-portfolio, which is from, I think, Bessemer or somebody in the States, with this idea of who did you miss? Who did you say no to that, you know, not because, and this is the other thing. It's like, I said no because I didn't have the money to invest. Well, is that a miss? It kind of is. Should it go there? Should it not go there? So so I try and think about ones that I miss. Typing DNA is a good, is a good, I didn't meet the CEO, but I met the marketing guy, and they had some clients doing online testing in the States. And so it's, I liked him, but I just missed out. So there's a few that are like that. And then I just learned that if I want to, you know, get in, I got to chase them, and that, you know, everybody makes mistakes and nobody picks all the winners. When I invested in my second company, Tellius was the first. So it's called My Tully. It makes a device for kids with ADD and ADHD, right? And it's a husband and wife team. And Gina, an entrepreneur here in Cluj, runs an IT company. She's like, Emmett, you're gonna invest in that. It's got hardware, and it's and I said, Gina, if everything I invest in is a winner, I'll be on the cover of Forbes magazine in the U.S. So I'm gonna have to miss on some of them. But I like the people. I like the concept. I like what that product is going to do for the kids and the families and the doctors get the data. So, yeah, I mean, an ROI for Tellius is that, okay, we'll make some money. Okay, great. Hopefully more than some. But we're helping the ecosystem. And I say we because Philip and I are Americans. But it's not just us. Everybody else is Romanian. We're helping the ecosystem in the country we chose to live. And that's an ROI that you really can't put a number on. For sure.
Yeah. Emmett, thank you so much for saying yes to this interview and for helping startups and the ecosystem, not only in Cluj, but in Romania. And I wish you a very good year.
It's my pleasure. And thanks, thanks for being interested. And I wish you as well a great 2024.
Thank you so much. And I'm going to switch a bit to Romanian. Pentru a vă mulțumi că ați urmărit acest interviu, puteți să vă abonați pe YouTube, unde ați putut viziona acest interviu, sau pe orice platformă de streaming, cum ar fi Spotify sau Apple Music. Eu am fost Vlad Andreescu, o zi bună!